you tell me some of your overall findings from, well, let's start. You were telling me you talked about soil conservation with the Rotary yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. Mainly in terms of the work that the experiment station is doing on minimum tillage. We've found that here in Alaska, our soils are very erodible, and we have to do something to protect against soil loss. And there are several methods that have been used in the lower 48 states, and they don't really deal with the soils, things like shelter belts, grass strips, strip cropping, windbreaks. All of these protect in some manner, but they don't deal with the soil resource. And so in Alaska, what we're now trying to do is deal directly with that resource. And our method of attack is conservation tillage. And I should probably explain a little bit of what conservation tillage really is. It's a method of disturbing the soil in the least possible manner, but yet maintaining a reasonably high crop yield. In the past, conventional tillage has disturbed the soil extensively. What it amounts to is either a moldboard plow, which disturbs very deeply, or else several diskings, two or three in the spring, taking all the residue off the surface and leaving the soil bare. Now this provides an excellent seed bed. Drills operate very efficiently. You get a good seed contact with the soil, but it also leaves the soil vulnerable to winds. A cut down from this is what's called minimum tillage. In minimum tillage, you do use a tillage implement. In Alaska, right now on new lands, it would most likely be a disc, but you'd only operate with the disc once, and it could be in the fall or it could be in the spring. You might use a chisel, which is a little bit more disturbing to the soil than a disc. It's deeper, and then harrow over the top of that. And you'd still leave a substantial amount of residue, and you could drill into this surface with a conventional drill. The very extreme in conventional tillage is what's called no-till. And in this particular case, you don't disturb the soil at all, and you go directly into the soil with your drill. All the residues are left on, high stubble is left on, and you accomplish several things. Obviously, you leave the soil the least vulnerable. You also save in operations over the field, so it's a more time-saving operation.
On the minimum tillage, you're saying that it goes on tillage. Let me paraphrase to make sure I'm understanding this. It goes from everything from traditional plowing it up and disking it and everything several times to nothing more than just having your seed drill punch the seed into the ground that has had no preparation.
Well, yes, I guess you could say that. That's from the highest degree of tillage to none at all. And conservation tillage, of course, wouldn't be that highest degree.
I was using the extremes there.
Okay, right. We've used all three. We generally use the maximum as a control, but our interest is in the comparison of minimum to no-till, because we are looking for conservation measures. We've run a study. It was a 3-year study with barley, rapeseed, and fallow in rotation, and our research has found that the minimum tillage will result in the highest yields.
How does the yield for minimum tillage compare to the traditional
The order goes something like this. Minimum and maximum, or the real heavy tillage, have shown very little difference. So in terms of a choice, in yield-wise, in terms of a choice conservation-wise, one would obviously select the minimum tillage. Now, 3 years is not a very long time to run tillage research. We've now started a longer-term research. This was more or less a preliminary study. The no-tillage in all years came out lower. In some cases, it was very close to minimum, but it was lower. And this is understandable. In the north, our soils are cool. And so if you don't take the residue cover off in some way in the spring, you do in fact delay thawing of the soils. And so in the colder seed bed, you will delay germination. And this has affected yield. Another thing that does happen with no-tillage, it's a disease carrier. It's quite possible because of the residue being left on year after year, it doesn't decompose rapidly in the cold soils, that you could be promulgating a disease carrier. You could also be promulgating a weed carrier. One thing that people don't realize about no tillage, we always say, yes, it's an extreme measure, extreme conservation measure, and it also saves several trips across the field. But one thing I always like to mention is, particularly in terms of weed control, which is important here, you have to, instead of using tillage for weed control, use herbicides. And the herbicide price, since they are petroleum-based, is rising. In our case, one of the big problems we have to control are perennial grasses. And perennial grasses require some fairly expensive herbicides. For example, Roundup is $90 a gallon or so. They vary from 60 to 90 a gallon. And you would need an application maybe several years running to control the perennial grasses. And just in rough calculations we've made, the no-till is slightly more expensive than the minimum till and even the maximum till because of this herbicide cost.
Talking about economics, between, you said the minimum till had the best, had a very good rate of return on harvest.
Yes.
The minimum till compared to the maximum till, and based on the yield, which is economically a better rate?
The minimum. I haven't run the stats to figure out if it is significant or not. On paper, just looking at it, if I had the choice, I would pick it. It might might mean $2 or $3 per acre. And when you multiply that by 2,000 acres, it's not bad.
Now, this is based on a 3-year study. Are we going to continue this study?
We're continuing it now. In 1983, we established a new study, which I'm really quite pleased with. It's a continuous barley rather than a fallow rotation. It considers 4 different tillage methods. No-till again, maximum till again, but 2 minimum tills, one in which we use a fall tillage operation. We've not been very successful with it in the past. We're operating on new ground, and it seems that if we till in the fall, in the high moisture, which seems to be characteristic here, we get a very rough seed bed. But we think as the lands are used, this is going to be an excellent method. It certainly will save time in the spring. So we've included a fall treatment and a spring treatment in the minimum till, and we use both a disc and a chisel. So we have those two. Now, in addition, we've also considered stubble management, which we consider quite important. Let me explain why. There are 2 winds in the interior, particularly in Delta, that are very erosive. One is a winter wind. And if the soil can remain protected by a snow cover, the soil won't dry out and in consequence blow. To protect it, one needs a fairly good stubble cover. And so what we've done is considered a treatment in which the stubble is left about a foot high and all residues are left on the surface. The stubble is left about a foot high and the residues are baled off. And then we have another extreme treatment in which we cut the stubble down as far as we possibly can and then remove all the residue. And even this year, in this winter, we're seeing a terrific difference in snow entrapment between those treatments. And just preliminary results indicate that in terms of stubble alone, the middle treatment, stubble with the residue removed, will be the most effective. This treatment also has some interesting implications. The residue removed is in the form of straw. There's been an excellent market for straw here in the past, and of course that's because the supply is short. As production increases, that straw supply is going to increase as well, and the market isn't going to be that good. And the experiment station right now is considering putting in a demonstration straw burner grain dryer system. We feel this may well be an answer to the high cost of drying our high moisture grains. So that particular treatment has some interesting economic implications.
Are our grains particularly high moisture up here?
Our grains are high moisture. It's quite a problem, as a matter of fact. In the early development years, we didn't seem to notice it as much. The fall weather patterns were slightly different in 77 and 78, but the weather patterns we're seeing now with a fairly moist fall, not in amounts of rainfall as much as in numbers of cloudy days or days in which there's just a slight amount of rainfall. are very conducive to high moisture barley. In fact, this year barley was harvested, I'd say, on an average of about 20% moisture. Now, that's high, because it has to be dried down to approximately 13.5-14%. And it's very costly using propane. And we need to find an alternate fuel.
Well, going back to your low tillage and no tillage, and you say it's an ongoing, is there any length of time for this new tillage process that you're doing?
The funding we have for it is a 5-year grant. It's a USDA Agricultural Research Service special grant. We hope to continue it on beyond that. Most tillage studies that you find reported have been ongoing for 10 or 15 years. You begin then to see the long-range effects.
Well, you can factor in all the variations in the weather patterns too, can't you?
Yes, you can.
Now, but you say right now you would recommend, if you were a farmer, what would you use?
If I were a farmer, I would try to disc in the fall, and I would try to directly seed into that seed bed in the spring. If I couldn't do the disking in the fall, I would do it in the spring. And I'm specifically stating disc because I'm assuming if I were a farmer, I'd be farming on new lands. If I were farming on old lands in which I had no sticks, no moss, effectively no junk, I would use a chisel with sweeps and disturb the soil as little as I could and then directly seed into it. We have not specifically done that. It's a very difficult thing to measure. We can tell by using what's called the wind erosion equation, the erodibility of the soil, and thus predict the loss that we might expect. But it's a pretty difficult thing to determine. You know, the soil is moved from one place to another, so where one spot loses, the other gains, this is still erosion. We think that we have lost in some cases up to 3 or 4 inches over a period of 7 years. And when you're speaking of an organic layer that's maybe a foot deep, that's a lot.
We have relatively shallow soils too, don't we?
Yes, we do.
And how long does it take? Can the soil rebuild itself?
No. Soil is a non-renewable resource.
In other words, a new organic layer can't be built up by...
It can be. Oh, yeah, sure, it can be. It can eventually be, of course. And the process is extremely long. And in the north, we have no idea how long that process will take. We've had some interesting experiences here in Fairbanks. There was a field that had been planted to hay about 10 years ago. And then the hay was plowed under. And the hay cover, grass cover, was plowed under. And 2 years ago, we went back in and retilled the field. And some of those clods of hay were still coming up to the top.
So much for organic gardening.
Yeah. Well, organic gardening works. It's a little different process. I don't want to irritate some organic gardeners out there because I know there are some successful users of it.
I've jumped around. I may have missed some things you would like to include.
I think you've covered it very well, but I'd like to add that Alaska could, in fact, be a very important leader in soil conservation. Her soils are new. She does have a problem. We have the opportunity to go in now and really put in some very nice conservation practices. Tillage, grass strips, which we haven't tried, but seem to be a viable option if we can find a grass that stands up, which we're working on. We don't have to go in and correct. We can actually prevent, and that's a big advantage.
Let me ask one question. It's probably the wrong question to ask an agricultural specialist. But with the low tillage leaving the foot-high stubble, will that be any benefit for the wildlife in the area?
Oh, yes. Right now, the ducks and cranes and geese love that stubble. The little rodents obviously love the stubble. And, of course, that's an add to your hare and lynx population. You'll find that that's true in almost all agricultural areas. When you've turned to a lesser tillage method, wildlife does, in fact, benefit from it. The farmer doesn't care for the geese and the cranes tromping in his field that much. You'd be amazed at how much damage they can do. Just in matting down the stubble, if a lot of them do come in. But yeah, it's been a major feeding area for the cranes and the geese in the past.
What are they feeding on? The spilled grain?
In part the spilled grain and in part the stubble. And just the residues that are left.